welcome everybody to episode 3 of A Yank and King Regal's Court. I am Rollerball Anthony, joined, as always, by my tired, my exhausted, but my nonetheless Regal co-partner here, Tack Brown. How you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. That's the first time I've ever been called Regal, though.
I'm sure it won't be the last. It's been a
I mean, I'll take it. Like.
Hey, you know what? I'll make sure that's what we're gonna add on every from here on out. You're gonna be the Regal one, Tack Brown. So
I'm gonna end up with a massive like David Starr style nickname eventually. I know it takes like 10 minutes to get me introduced at the beginning of the show.
Just the intro is gonna be 20 minutes of me reading off your accolades.
Yeah, your favorite podcaster's favorite podcaster and all that sort of stuff.
All right. Now that's my homework. So, how you doing, bud?
Yeah, doing good. I am absolutely shattered. It's been like a 70-hour work week, so I'm a little bit worse for wear, but still on a high from last Sunday's progress show, though. So, that's literally kept me going all week.
Just riding that wave all the way through the week. Yeah,
I wish I'd do it every Sunday.
Yeah, this might be a little more subdued because you just worked, 20 hours, or like a 16, 17 hour work day.
Yeah, 16 odd hours I've done today. I was in work before 6 o'clock this morning.
Oh. And I had Oktoberfest last night here in Chico. Sierra Nevada has like a real big October, like 2-weekend Oktoberfest. So we went last night and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, how delicate are you today, though?
I've been worse, but hanging in there. A lot of water, a lot of coffee. Had a couple donuts to help kind of soak up everything this morning. So I don't know. We'll see. It's definitely
that's a very, very American hangover cure.
Maybe I don't know exactly what the American hangover cure. California still like we kind of do a lot of like Mexican food the next morning.
Don't have like a fry up. Like a fry up is the way to go. Nothing cures a hangover better than a fry up and a pint of Guinness.
A fry up? What's a fry up?
Fry up like a full English breakfast, like bacon, fried eggs, toast, black pudding, the whole lot.
Yeah, and a beer.
And a Guinness if you can get hold of one that early in the morning. Yeah, Guinness sorts you right out.
I might have to. I'll next time. We do it up big. I'll have that ready to go the next morning.
Yeah, I won't go past a 10-pint session if I haven't got a tin of Guinness in the fridge, so they can sort me out in the morning.
That will be the next time. Just Gatorade for the night. Wake up, pint of Guinness.
Yep.
Good to go.
Yeah, it's like magic. Guinness is in the morning. Sorts you right out, and it's almost like having a meal because the stuff's so heavy.
that is true. All right, so we got a lot to get to. First off, with the news, huge news from Japan: PAC, FKA, formerly known as Neville, formerly known as Adrian Neville, he came out of hiding. He's been pretty much absent for about 8-9 months now. He comes back to his first kind of real spot in Dragon's Gate in Japan. Tack, how excited are you right now?
It's huge, and it was a shock because, I mean, if I was a betting man, I don't think Dragon Gate would have been where I'd have bet he'd pop up. And I don't remember if he was ever actually future endeavored by WWE. Did they ever actually announce that he was?
It was all real quiet. He got moved to the alumni page, like I think 2 or 3 months ago. And
well, there wasn't even a .com like 2-line wishing well with his future endeavors or any of that. I never saw any of that personally.
There may have been, but I think it was just all dirt sheet stuff that were like, hey, that kind of like broke it. As it was like, hey, we've heard from people at WWE that, you know, they've separated.
Because Dragon's Gate, they have, they do have like, it is a TV promotion, isn't it, in Japan? Like, it's a big, big old promotion. But yeah, can he work elsewhere if he's there? Or?
I mean, I don't know the particulars. I mean, I know
Like generally, I mean, do their guys work other places, or are they
I don't know if they
relative?
work. I don't know if they work ever other places in Japan. Japan does have a little bit of a history of cross promotion.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure if Dragon Gate does a lot of that.
It just seems odd to me that if that was like an exclusive thing, like just most guys who once they get out of WWE, they have can't they do the bucket list, don't they, where they want to go and work for a few
Right.
different places. Although saying that, I suppose he did that kind of on the way up, didn't he? He was everywhere at one point or another. I don't suppose there's much left on his bucket list, really.
Right, yeah, because I think he was in one of the Best of Super Juniors in New Japan, which is typically where you'll get like that crossover.
Yeah, he's definitely worked for New Japan before. I know that.
Yeah, but I know Dragon's Gate was kind of where he made his really made like the name for himself before he went to WWE.
Right,
So
so it makes sense, really, then. But it's awesome that he's back. I'm glad he's fine, because a guy that good shouldn't be just wasting away, sitting at home waiting for work. He should be wrestling while he's in the best years of his life.
oh yeah, no, and he from the pictures I've seen, he looks like he is
Oh,
hasn't
he looks jacked.
oh he hasn't lost a step
Yeah.
at all. Like he looks like he just came out of that how he was looking on 205 Live where he was just made of stone.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, he must spend 23 hours out of the 24 a day in the gym
Just to go home
to look like
quick
that.
sleep, back into it.
Like
But
that body shape is so far from mine that I don't even believe that he's the same species as me.
I think I said the same thing. I was like, I don't understand how we're same. We're human. Like, how is that a human?
Yeah.
It's insane. But I just saw, I think it was last night, I saw that his first match is against Flamita, who we'll talk about in a bit. But
Oh, cool. Yeah.
yeah, so I think that should be a really, really good match.
That's cool. They won't need a mat for that. They can just spring around the place.
It'll be like
Yeah.
Dragon Ball Z, just in the
Yeah.
air. Just all of it in the
Yeah.
air. But yeah, so that'll be his first match. Not quite sure when that's happening. I didn't catch a date, but I think that seems to be his first match.
Yeah, I'm just happy he's back working, because, like I say, it's such a waste of a talent not having him regularly wrestling. He's so good
Right.
that it's a shame that we haven't seen him for what, a good year now.
About that, yeah,
Yeah.
coming up. So I think the big thing is going to be where he lands England side.
Yeah.
We are a British wrestling podcast, so I know Jim Smallman has said that he's wanted to get to. They were looking at signing or not signing Pac, but booking Pac a few
Yeah.
times before he went to WWE, and it just never worked out. So it'll be interesting to see if they get Pac back.
It all becomes very politicsy, doesn't it? Because with the WWE connection at Progress, it depends on how he sits with WWE now that he's gone. And
And
like,
also,
does
how
that affect
much.
the way he works with Progress? I mean, I know Dragon Gate have got ties with Fight Club. So is he going to end up working some shows for Fight Club? Is he going to come here at all? I mean, there's no guarantee that we're going to see him wrestle this side for a while.
Oh, then,
Obviously,
yeah.
I'd love to, and wherever he's going to pop up, once he pops up on shows, I'm going to do my best to get out and see him live, definitely.
Right. Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to kind of see where he lands, especially in England, like you said, with the progress ties to WWE. I think that'll show one. Regardless, I think everyone knows it was kind of like a real bad split between the two.
Yeah.
So I think this will kind of show where the relationship with
Yeah.
WWE and Progress is. Like, is WWE really calling a little more of the shots than people are being led on to believe, or are they letting Progress kind of like do their own thing?
Yeah. And I mean, a bad just because the split was bad, it doesn't always mean that he's on bad terms with them now. He could have always said, because it's that's what I mean, it's wrestling, isn't it? There's so many ins and outs and who likes who and what is. It's difficult to speculate of what could go on until it kind of happens, really.
No, oh yeah, I mean, it's you never really know what is real and not until it happens. So who knows? So yeah, so that's the big news regarding him, and I know that was kind of a lot of people's figuring out what's going to happen next. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be keeping an eye for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. So going more into our Brits abroad, Will Ospreay and Marty Skrull, they had another banger of a match at Strong Style Evolved. I haven't seen it yet. It's just I'm going off of everyone's reviews, but it still seems like their chemistry is, you know, at the top.
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing as soon as we finish recording. That's my next thing. It's queued up now on my computer. So as soon as we're done, that's what I'm going to be watching because I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Yeah, I think they started with like a straight into a standing Spanish fly. So it was from there, it just really took off.
Just standard Ospreay, 100 miles an hour, right from the off, isn't it?
Right, right. But Marty Skrull did get the win. So he will be facing Kushida, I believe, at King of Pro Wrestling, which is happening tonight as we record, and a few days ago as you are listening to this. Also from Strong Style Evolved, Zack Sabre, he picks up the win over Evil in a six-man tag with Los Ingobernables de Japón versus the Killer Elite Squad and Zack Sabre Jr., both of Suzuki Goon. Zack Sabre Jr. picks up the win over Evil with a European clutch. And nice. Then in the backstage segment, basically just torches Halloween.
Yeah, I feel like Zack lived on a very long road with only one house on it when he was a kid and he had no one to trick or treat. Because I've never heard anyone hate Halloween so much.
I think it's great. I'm not a huge Halloween guy. I think it's
such an oddly specific gimmick, isn't it? Like his gimmick now is the British guy who hates the American holiday.
Is Halloween an American holiday? Do you guys even celebrate it over there?
We don't do it a hundredth of what you guys do. We do it, but you kind of get like two knocks on the door through the night, and that's pretty much it.
Right. And like,
some kids don't even dress up. They just turn up with like a plastic mask on or something. Like I was years ago, I was in Universal for Halloween, and like the way you guys do it there is just, it blew my mind. It's like, oh, we don't even try. So it's always been viewed as like it's an American thing that's kind of crept in over here, but it's more of an excuse just for like women to dress scantily and men to go out and get drunk.
For the most part, outside of trick-or-treating with the kids, like that's all it is for us. Especially now, I live in a college town, so that's all it is Halloween just turns into mayhem downtown.
Yeah, but yeah, I feel sorry for Zack. I kind of want to like get him dressed, get him a little outfit, get him dressed up, and make him out trick-or-treating.
A little James Corbin outfit.
Yeah. We'll get him a little stick-on beard, and get him to walk on his knees, because Corbin is a very small man. Yeah. And yeah, we'll just walk him about and see if we get some sweeties for him and cheer him up a bit.
He's a vegan, though, so you got to watch out what... There's a lot of milk chocolate out there, so you got to watch out exactly which ones you get. I guess a lot of Skittles.
Yeah, I think there's probably like three different sweets you can have, actually, now you say it. They're all shit ones as well. There's not really any good.
Skittles is pretty good. That's one of my preferred candies.
Yeah, but they still put all the bad things in your sweets. We don't get good stuff in our sweets anymore. They're all like homogenized and, you know, the government trying to look after our health.
Really?
Giving us, yeah, they take all the good stuff out of sweets. We don't get any like corn syrup or like it's half sugar. That's all the stuff that makes stuff taste good.
That I guess that's true. God, it's so good though. Just think about that. I'm trying to figure out ways I can steal my students' candy when they start bringing it in this month.
It's like a classroom charge, isn't it? Like, as they come in, you've got.
I do that. Yeah, like I'll just grab their chips and be like, "Oh, teacher tax."
Yeah, yeah, that's the power of teacherhood, isn't it?
It really is. It's one of the small benefits that not a lot of people know about.
Is it like the teachers off cartoons where, like, you know, that you open the top drawer and they've got like a slingshot and like a few packs of chewing gum and like some like devil bangers and stuff?
I imagine maybe like 30, 40 years ago, maybe, but now it's just cell phones. Just
cell phones
and iPods. Yeah, just taking cell phones. That's all it is. All right, and finally, it's Toni Storm. She wins to move on to the quarterfinals of this year's Mae Young Classic as she beat Hiroyo Matsumoto in a really good match. Have you seen that one yet?
No, not yet. I'm way behind on Mae Young. I'm 2 weeks behind now. I've got the day off tomorrow, and all I'm doing tomorrow is watching wrestling, is the plan. I'm going to catch up on the Mae Young. I'm going to watch the Super Showdown, or as much of it as I can stomach. From what I've heard, it's not great. But
yeah, I took a pass on that one. No, Toni Storm was great. It was a really good match. She, I think, ended up winning with a European clutch type, you know, pinning predicament, kind of that British catch-as-catch-can style to kind of beat Matsumoto, who was really kind of controlling the match for the most part. But it was really good, really fun. Toni Storm continues to be someone that WWE is putting a lot of trust in.
Yeah, and rightly so, because she is brilliant. I've seen her wrestle like tens and tens of times now, and I've never seen her have anything short of a great match. She's really is the total package, and she's so young as well. I can see why WWE are putting a lot of time and a lot of trust in her.
Yeah,
I mean, she can make her money for years and years to come. She could easily be one of their top women for another 10 years ongoing.
Oh yeah,
she's got the total package
easily. And I like what they're doing with her, where they're not signing her full time. They're letting her do, you know, kind of whatever on the indie scene with Progress and, you know, some other stuff. And
yeah, I think they've learned a lot from doing that with the first round of British guys. I think letting them go out and hone their craft other places has paid off, especially, I mean, look at Tyler Bate, I think, is the perfect example of that. I mean, the guys had, what, two five-star WWE five-star matches are so few and far between, and he's had two in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think a lot of that is down to he's not just being molded into a WWE guy. He's been allowed to go out and find his style. And I think it's worked wonders for him. And I think the same will happen is happening for Toni Storm.
Yeah, I think Toni Storm's going to be great. I mean, I think she is already awesome and great and probably top 10 female wrestlers in the world. So it'll be a lot of fun to kind of watch how WWE kind of continues bringing her along.
Yeah, I can't see them messing it up, because she's just got everything, but I can see them messing it up, but I hope they don't. I hope they keep going with her right up to, no rush, but I think they need to get her signed soon, like full time sooner rather than later, and start making her a mainstay on TV through NXT and onto the main roster. Because, like I said, there's so many years of talent there that she is just money. She's so good.
Oh yeah, she's really, really amazing. So that kind of puts us an end to Brits Abroad. So now we're going to be moving on into our recap portion of the show. First off, we're going to do Pro Wrestling Eve Strong Women's Style. This took place, I believe, the day before Wembley on that Saturday.
Yes, not before Wembley, or day before Wembley, what I'm going to call it, yeah.
Right, so Pro Wrestling Eve, they ran two shows. They did Strong Women's Style 1 and 2. Right now, we're pretty much only focusing on 1. We'll have 2 for you next week. But this was my first introduction to Pro Wrestling Eve, and I got to say, I really liked it.
Yeah, it's one of the, I've not been to a live show yet, but everything that I've watched there is online, and I got in a Wrestle Crate like the Best of Eve, which had all their best matches from last year, and that's just chock full of fantastic stuff, and everything I've watched on their demand and everything else has just been fantastic. Like I said last week, it's few and far between an all women's promotion, and they do it right.
Yeah, what I love about it, and this is like number one thing I wrote in my notes, is this is Punk capitalized, underlined twice, exclamation points. This was, for somebody that grew up in like the Bay Area punk scene, and going to like dingy clubs and seeing like shows with like 30 people and just people getting thrown through like merch tables and whatever. This was like everything I remember about that scene. Like just real DIY, real punk.
Yeah, they always pick gnarly venues as well, which is really cool because it adds, I think, having that sort of nightclub venues and things like that, I think that adds something to that punk rock feel as well.
Yeah, and I just really, really loved it. Just like I said, the overall vibe from it, the crowd's right at the ring. There's, you know, you can tell that it's just not a lot of room in there. And, you know, and I thought that was so awesome.
Yeah, my favorite thing about them as a promotion is they're an all women's promotion, but they don't beat you around the head with that fact. It's like they just treat it like it's just any other promotion.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the like all women promotions I've seen, like it's constant all the time. And I know it's because they're trying to say like, you know, it's women's empowerment and all that, and I understand that, but at the same time it's like if you keep singling it out and pointing it out, you're never going to make it mainstream.
Right.
If that makes sense. Like, I like the way that Eve just kind of go, like, they just go, right, it's an all women's show. That's all you need to know. And then they just treat it like any other show after that. Like, everybody's earned their place there because they're good wrestlers, not just because they're women.
Yeah. And
I think that's a reason why it's growing so fast, because, I mean, people are taking notice week on week. There's more and more people watching.
Yeah, and I think they're doing some really smart things of booking around, like, whenever Progress has a real big show. I know they ran a night at during Super Strong Style weekend. Yes. And there was a lot of Progress fans that started at Progress, took the bus, or it was one or the other where they either started at Eve, took the bus over to Progress, or they went from Progress to Eve.
Yeah,
and
they usually run on the Saturday before a Progress show, or any other big show. When the big Fight Club weekender, they ran just before that as well, which is clever because, yeah, like you say, it's saving on costs, isn't it?
Yeah, but
it's the way it should be run, really. That makes sense because you're bringing in the best talent and you're not having to pay a ridiculous amount of money for it, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah, you're like splitting travel costs, and like I said, I think it's really, really smart. But they do bring in some really big names, and we'll kind of get to that in a second. So first off, the first match, we kind of talked about this last week, was Laura DiMatteo versus Kaylee Ray. This was a really good match. Obviously, Kaylee Ray is one of the most underrated women on the scene right now. Laura DiMatteo, I think, is really starting to find her. Her stride.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say Laura DiMatteo is one of those that she started off well and then she kind of seemed to stall for a little while, but whatever she's been doing recently has really seems to have set fire under her again, and she's been brilliant everywhere I've seen her the past couple of months.
Yeah, and she picked up the win in a really, really fun way where she reversed Kaylee Ray's Gory Bomb into an Achilles lock.
And oh wow. I thought,
I'm sorry. And then she did that. That was a really good move, but Kaylee Ray did pick up the win with a Gory Bomb. Sorry, I misread my notes. Guys, I'm hungover. But
Well, my friend Dan was giving me shit last week because I kept forgetting things in the first 2 weeks, so I've got proper notes in front of me this week. So if I make any mistakes, it's only because I can't read.
Yeah. I also call a quick disclaimer real quick. The ICW shows are not Suge Knight's house party. They are Suge's house party. I in no way meant to imply that ICW had any affiliation with Death Row Records founder and current inmate Suge Knight. I apologize.
Can you imagine what Suge Knight would make of being at one of those shows?
Suge Knight would be the ICW champion by the end of the night.
Well, that's a bold claim, but I find it hard to disagree with. I did think when he said it, but I just sort of rolled with it. And then, yeah, after you pointed it out.
It wasn't until when I was listening back to kind of look, I was like, well, I'll just leave it. So the next match is Jetta versus Nina Samuels. This is my first time seeing Jetta. And Nina Samuels is very familiar to us from Progress. Have you ever seen Jetta before?
Yeah, I saw her wrestle for AMP, which is my local, the first rung kind of promotion. I saw her come up through there, so I saw her really early on in the career. She's from what I've seen, she's a good hand, but she's just lately, she's another one who just lately has been popping up in a lot more places, and she seems to have found something from somewhere, and she's not the same wrestler that I saw that the first few times round. AMP is it's your Sunday league wrestling, basically. It's where guys go when they've had some big names through there. Pete Dunne wrestled for them. Chris Brooks wrestled for them, but it's proper school gyms with 30 people there kind of shows.
Right.
It's your jumping off point kind of show, really, and that's the only place I'd seen her before now. But like I said, just recently she's been popping up everywhere, and she's a lot better than she was back then.
Yeah.
So whatever she's doing it right.
Yeah, she looked like a lot of fun. It was a pretty good match. Jetta, a lot of banter. She really kind of was talking a lot, which is good, I think. And I think that's kind of her character from what I was kind of getting. But
yeah, it seems to be, yeah.
Yeah, either way, she picks up the win with the Tilted World roll-up. I thought it was a fun little move. And she qualifies for the She-1. Yes. Third match was Viper versus Bay Priestley, which was a great match. Obviously, Viper and Bay Priestley, they are two stalwarts of the English scene, as well as over in Japan.
Yes, B. Priestley is always a great hand. As far as I know, she was injured for a little while, wasn't she?
She sort of disappeared
for a little while, yeah, and then she just popped back up, carrying on right from where she has. She's always been, she'll have a solid match with anybody.
Yeah, she had and she is good friends and has worked a lot with Viper. They were in a tag team together over in, why am I blanking? It's not Ice Ribbon, it's not Sendai Girls. It's Stardom. Stardom's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
It was a really good, a really good match. Viper picked up the win. Power bomb onto the apron, rolled her in, hits the Viper driver for the win. Really good, fun match.
Why do you know why Viper has so many different nicknames?
I don't.
Because even on Eve, she goes under four different names. I don't know if it's dependent on who she's wrestling or if it's just to do with what gear she's wearing or what.
It might be. But yeah, I know she does have a few different kind of persona she's rocking, which I think is cool. I think that's a lot of fun. Keeps it from going stagnant, I guess.
Yeah, it's just sort of always wondered why she, ever since I've seen her work, she's always going under so many different nicknames. She's literally got seven or eight different nicknames, and it doesn't seem to depend on promotion or anything. It's just whichever one she fancies, I guess, for the card.
Yeah. But, I don't really know. I'll have to look into that. So, fourth match was Chihiro Hashimoto versus the Alpha Female. This was rough. Not in a bad way. Yeah, it's just a hard-hitting match.
Yeah, it's got war written. Any way you put Alpha Female, it's going to be, what is it you call it? A hoss match.
Oh, yeah.
It's, Yeah.
I have
just slapping chunks out of each other.
Oh, and I have that Hashimoto has the same body type as Evil. And that really laid into the match, and kind of that Haas versus Haas mentality was real good.
She's got what, the same body type as Evil, did you say?
Yeah, just kind of that stocky.
She's a barrel person.
Yes.
Is what you mean.
But that was a really, really good match. Hashimoto picked up the win there. Fifth match, and we're going to kind of, like I said, we still got a lot to go through, especially with Wembley, so we're going to kind of hustle through this. Chris Wolf, she fought Zoe Lucas. That was a little bit more of a comedy match. Zoe Lucas seemed like she was pretty young.
Yeah, I don't really know much about her at all, actually.
Yeah, but
she's pretty new, I think.
Yeah, but Chris Wolf, she could drag an entertaining match out of anything. She's a lot of fun, a lot of energy. She picked up the win. The next match was Sierra Loxton versus Jordan Grace in a She-1 qualifier. And big thing I picked up is that Loxton kind of toned down the whole freaky princess thing. She still goes by it a little bit, but she got a mean streak in her.
Yeah, she's always been a little bit of a firecracker. No, I'm really excited. I'm going to jump on and watch that match tomorrow as well. I'm really excited to see that match because they're two people that I always take notice of when I see their name on a card.
Yeah, it was a really fun match. Really, really good, solid wrestling. And this was the She-1 qualifier. And Jordan Grace actually picked up the win in the She-1. And it looks like Jordan might be spending more time in England.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think as a lot of the independent workers are doing nowadays, I think she's looking at having a good stint over here. I really hope she is anyway. I can't wait to see her live somewhere.
Yeah. I think she has a lot to learn as far as the British style, and I think it will only do wonders in kind of like really helping her round out her style.
Yeah. There's a lot to learn on these shows. I think a lot of people have started to notice. I think that's something that was missing for a while as well. And I think a lot of, not just Jordan Grace, but I think a lot of people are starting to notice that they can come to the UK and learn from that British style. And they don't have to take on the whole thing, but there's a lot to learn from the British catch style of wrestling. I think people are starting to notice that again now, especially with how hot our scene is at the minute.
Yeah, and Jordan Grace won with the European clutch. So she is kind of using that... it's short time over there already to kind of pick up some stuff and kind of use that English catch style.
She's that good. She probably only learned it like that morning.
She probably did.
Yeah, I'll just try that out. That'll probably do it.
And it looked really good. It was really solid.
I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, really it's a fun match, man. And then finally, for the main event, we had Sami Zayn versus Casey versus Rhea O'Reilly versus Charlie Morgan in a four-way elimination match for the title. Let's see here. Casey got eliminated first, then it was Rhea O'Reilly, then Sami Zayn got pinned by Charlie Morgan. Charlie Morgan retains the Pro Wrestling Eve title, and really fun match.
Yeah, good. I'm happy Charlie Morgan's still champ there. She's been brilliant there so far. And she's one of, I think she's done a little bit for WWE UK, but I think she's been a little bit overlooked while all this like WWE and Progress Chaos and stuff's been happening. She's not really been getting the notoriety she deserves, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I'm glad she's got that top spot at Eve and she's doing great things with it.
Yeah, same. I think, she is kind of getting overlooked, but at least Eve is kind of giving her that recognition for being really good.
Yeah, I saw Charlie Morgan earlier this year at a show at a place called The Box in a little shopping village called Fargo Village, which is kind of like, it's like almost like everything there's craft shops and homemade, and there's like a craft beer place and that sort of thing. And she wrestled in front of about 20, 25 people. And Doug Williams was on that card as well, actually. And literally the next night, she wrestled at the WWE. Was it the Albert Hall they played at the WWE show, like the very next night? And it was quite surreal that, like, the show we saw were actually kind of just like waltzed in from the bar, wrestled a match, and just stood around and watched the rest of the show. And the next night, she was working WWE's biggest UK show in years. It was quite an odd, surreal thing, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's insane. That man, how you keep your head on straight to go from 30 to you know, like, a couple thousand, like
3,500 there. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about British wrestling, is that, like, there are big shows, but the same guys work everything. Like, the same guys will, they'll turn up to wrestle a show in front of 20 or 30 people, even if they are working like Progress the next night and things like that. It seems that guys just like to wrestle here. They just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, I saw Joey Ryan at that same box show at the box. Joey Ryan was top of the card there. And even though it was like a family show, he still did the, like, grab my dick spot and all that.
Yeah.
I took my little boy and he thought it was the funniest thing in the world. He spent the next couple of days telling everyone, including my mother, about this awesome new wrestler called Joey Ryan who tells everyone to grab his dick. And then I literally got a phone call from mum going, Brody's been telling me about this wrestling show you took him to. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. What's this Joey man, and why does he want everybody to grab his penis? I was like, oh, if I tried to explain it to you, you'd never talk to me again. I'll just send you this YouTube link. You can find out for yourself.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
It's just that, like I say, that's my favorite thing about, or one of my favorite things about the UK scene, is it doesn't matter the size of the show, like, guys will turn up and wrestle everything, and I think that's just really cool.
I think that shows the professionalism that's over there, you know, where it's like, yeah, hey, I'm gonna
commitment to your craft. I think
definitely it's that, you know, workman, you know, working class yeoman's type mentality that a lot of, like, the British workers have.
Yeah, turn up anywhere to get paid for it. If you're getting paid, I'll do whatever you want.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, let's move into the big show. Tell me all about it. What was it like, atmosphere wise?
Oh, where do I start? For the moment we even got into London, it just felt huge, because everywhere you looked within miles of Wembley was people in Progress shirts or wrestling shirts, and it was just, it felt huge. The arena looked incredible. It's so big, like, you don't realize how much, it was nearly 5,000 people, and you don't realize how much that is until you actually see that many people in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt genuinely historic and important. Like, from the second you walked into the arena, there was just so many people there. It's hard to explain. It just felt really important and like it really mattered.
What was the vibe like in the arena, like, before the show, before even, like, the dark match?
It's odd because it's still, even though it felt like way bigger than anything they've ever done and way more special than anything they've ever done, it still feels like a Progress show. Like, we were still having a laugh with the people around us and, like, chucking some beers down us and just talking bollocks about all sorts of stuff, not just wrestling. You know, you just sort of, whoever you're sitting or standing by, it just becomes your mate for the show kind of thing. So it didn't feel any different from a normal chapter show, but there was just that something extra to it. Like, the excitement was, like, everybody was just on the edge of their seat for the show just to even start. Like, right from the Morty Man Battle Royal opened the show, and then it was just nonstop excitement for the whole thing.
And it came across, you know, when I was watching the show earlier today and yesterday, like, it was really, like, you could tell that there was something special.
Yeah, it was even on the way down there, and me and my friend Ash, who I go to most shows with, in fact, I go to pretty much all shows with. We go to so many wrestling shows a year, but it was still like this one special. Like with this one, we're really geared up for. But there was just something historic in the air.
What were you more excited about on the train ride down? Was it the WWE UK show, like the first one that they ran, or this one, or Wembley?
This one, definitely. Yeah, without a doubt.
Wow.
Yeah, this is definitely, because like I said, my first ever progress show is Chapter 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I went when it was 350 people in a dodgy nightclub. So I've been to a progress show at every level it's been at. So I went to see them right through when they started going to places with 800 people, 1,000 people. When they did the big Ali Pali, the first big Ali Pali show, I went to that and saw, wow, they could sell 2,000 seats. That's insane. And then following them to make that jump to 5,000 people is just, it was no doubt I was more excited for Wembley, without a shadow of a doubt.
Awesome. That's, I truly wish I could have been in attendance. It sounds like it was amazing. So let's get into it. Dark show match, Chuck Mambo won the Battle Royal, eliminating Spike Treve last. How'd that go?
It was just ridiculous fun. It was almost as if they kind of went down the card and went, right, who are people's favorites who aren't on this card, and they just put them all in that match. It was just silly fun. I mean, Madman Manson turned up with boots written on his shins and a drawer of some boots, and he had gloves written on his hands and drew some gloves on because he couldn't afford boots or gloves, apparently.
That's awesome.
And then that was one of my favorite moments, because he got eliminated and immediately came and stood right behind where me and my mate Ash were. And just started telling us that the catering was pretty good, but it felt a bit Irish-centric because there was a lot of potato products. And he just stood there nattering with us for a little while, watching the rest of the Battle Royal. But there's loads of fun spots in it. I haven't rewatched on the network yet. Did they not put that? They haven't put the pre-show up at all.
I don't think so. I didn't see it. So right now, I think it's just the. Let me jump on Demand Progress. When I was looking, it was just the main card and the main events up for free, because I know a lot of people had to leave early because it was kind of ran over. But yeah, I don't see the pre-show.
Yeah, that's a shame, because it was Battle Royals are just chaos, aren't they? They're never going to be like a five-star match or anything, but it was a lot of fun, and there was loads of fun spots in it. I mean, there was a point where TK Cooper did some proper chain wrestling with inflatable Lycos. I mean, if that grows into any kind of feud, then I'll be well in for it. But it was really cool. He was putting arm bars on inflatable Lycos, and inflatable Lycos had him in a headlock, and they were flipping and dipping all over the place.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was really funny. The whole thing, it was just one huge comedy spot, really. But yeah, it worked for what it was. It was good fun.
Which is really what you need, kind of, to get everything going, get everyone in a good mood, kind of that opener that sets the tone. Everyone's going to have a good, fun time. It's not going to be super serious.
Yeah. And I did call on our first show that Chuck Mambo would win it.
You did? Point out.
But I'm only calling that out because I think I've only got one other result right through the whole card. <Maybe two. laughs>
Yeah, I'd have to go back and re-listen to our predictions, but I think next time I'll kind of keep track of what we're predicting. But I think there was a few that we got right.
Yeah, but it was a shame that that match wasn't for anything. It was just, but I'm hoping that with Chuck now being, he won the Progress World Cup, and now he's won the pre-show. I hope he's going to at least use that to maybe bolster a few promos and say, look, I've won the World Cup. Now I've won this. Like, when's somebody going to start giving me a shot at something kind of thing? That's what I'm hoping comes from it.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah. It's enough bragging rights, isn't it?
To
be able to say, look, you put me in these big spots and I keep coming out on top, so do something with me kind of thing. I think that'd make for quite a good bolstering of a good promo.
I think it would, and I think it also shows that, like, the management is kind of seeing a lot in Chuck, you know, and kind of, I think they're doing enough with him to where they're saying, like, we're not forgetting about you, just hang in there, you know, like, your time's going to come.
I'd love them to have him, like, tag properly with TK, because they do their YouTube show and stuff. But
yeah, Escape the Midcard.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them two working together a bit more.
I think that'd be a lot of fun, especially with Travis Banks on the show.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that.
No, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Sorry, Carl. No, I was gonna jump ahead. I was gonna jump ahead further down the card, but I won't. I'll wait till we get there.
All right. So yeah, so that brings us to the opener. First line I have under Wembley is Jim keeping the monologue short.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate. What, like, you get in there.
2 minutes?
Yeah, it was about 10 minutes, 10, 15, something like that, which he has in past chapters gone 30.
Yeah. I mean, he's a stand-up comedian, and he's not even doing that properly now. I think he's retired from stand-up now, so, you know, he's got to get his shit in somewhere.
No, and I get it. I'm not mad at it. It was just funny. I was like, oh, okay, he's got 5,000 people, and now this is when he decides to do a tight 10.
I think short and sweet was fine.
No, I think it definitely worked, and Lord knows this is already a jam-packed show.
Yeah, that's it. It's such a packed card. I think it would have been daft to stretch it out anymore.
Yeah. So Mark Haskins' first match started off hot. Mark Haskins and Matt Riddle. What do you think of Matt Riddle's final independent show?
Yeah, he went out with a bang, definitely. I can see exactly why he picked Haskins, because it was kind of you want a war, you've got a war kind of thing. He went out with an impressive match. It's not the best Riddle match I've seen, but I think it was a fitting end to his indie career, definitely.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of exactly what his last match on the indies was supposed to be, kind of a shoot style. And, you know, Haskins, you know, gave as good as he got.
Yeah, there was one spot in there where I think it was quite near the end of the match. There's a superplex off the top, and it looked like both of them landed really badly.
Yeah.
Until they popped like right back up seconds later. But that was the point where that was the first point in the show where everybody in the arena kind of went, ooh, at the same time. But they both seemed pretty all right afterwards. So.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good match. Man, they had one spot where they just kicked each other's legs. And I trained kickboxing, and I was just like, nah, man, I'm good. I don't want that.
Yeah, there isn't a way of doing that that doesn't really hurt. Like, I mean, there can't be. It's just that spot always to me looks really, really vicious and really painful.
Well, the thing is like, you can't really like give a light kick without it looking bad. You got to lay into it, and just especially with Riddle not wearing shin guards,
just one of them, and I'd be a quivering mess on the floor, mumbling something about dead leg and just cut it off because it's never going to grow back. I can't understand that. These are them. They're them kind of things that where every time I see them, I just can't get my head around. Not just how, but why you'd want to do that. If I had the choice between having really hurt your shins or not, I'll just have not hurt your shins every time. But that's probably why I'm not a wrestler. That's why I just watch it, I guess.
Yeah, that's very true. That's pretty much why, like, from what I've heard, like, the first bump you take is like, oh, why am I doing this?
Like, yeah, I'll stick to, like, when I was a kid, used to bump on the sofa or out on the grass on the front, but even that, he used to be like, I'd sit and watch it at night and be like, yeah, I don't want to do anything they do. I knew from a young age that I didn't want to be a wrestler.
I'm just perfectly happy being a fan, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a great match. Did anyone ever find out if Riddle got his other flip-flop back?
I saw that Stokely Hathaway put a bounty out for his flip-flops and Big Wavy found them.
Yeah, cause who travels to the other side of the world and the only footwear they brought with them is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle flip-flops?
Riddle is...
He's such a rad dude, ain't he? But that's a special kind of special, that is.
Well, especially because, like, I don't know. I've never been to England in the fall, in the autumnal season, but I gotta imagine it's not exactly flip-flop weather.
Oh, no, it was a bit nippy. You definitely have chilly toes. Definitely.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not Vegas, so I don't know why he's... But, you know, the King of Bros does what the King of Bros does. Like, you can't really say what he's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to tell him he is the king? So, does what he wants, even if it means having cold feet.
Exactly. Regardless, he ends up taking the loss to Haskins and ends his independent career for the meantime. I think on top, you know, even though he took the loss.
Yeah, it's huge for Haskins as well, because like we said the other week, that just gives him so much fodder going forward. Say, look, I beat the WWE guy. I retired Matt Riddle because, I mean, he beat him on his way out. So
yeah,
as far as anyone's concerned, you've retired him from indie wrestling. I sent him packing to Florida. Right. Hopefully they use that as something more than just a win in Matt's column, and he can build something off that.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, I'd like to see Mark start to kind of regain his main event status.
Yeah, it's overdue.
One quick note, I did write that Vicky is on some Stephanie McMahon WrestleMania shit.
Yeah.
With her outfit.
Yeah. Yeah, she's ridiculously stunning at all times.
Yeah, she came out.
My friend Ash, who I was talking about earlier, he's never actually seen a Mark Haskins match when Vicky Haskins is with him, because he just spends all his time watching. He watches Vicky Haskins walk around for 20 minutes. He never actually sees the wrestling. So as far as he's concerned, there wasn't a Matt Riddle match on that card.
It was just a 20-minute kind of warm up spot.
Yeah, he does the whole, like, you know, like the tongue out, and then I have to pull it and it rolls back up like a cartoon.
Right, like an old Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, second match was Progress Women's Championship Triple Threat. Jenny, who came out with the House of Couture, defeated Millie McKenzie and Toni Storm by pinfall. I was a little surprised this was so early in the card.
Yeah, and it was a bit disappointing. It's the only real criticism of the whole show that I agree with, really. A lot of people have had a moan about certain things, not least it overrunning, but a lot of people said, like, there's been a lot of talk about on building the women's division and that, and then they gave them, what, like 8 or 9 minutes?
Yeah, about that. It wasn't long.
Which, so early on the card as well, it just made it feel unimportant, and like before the match even started, that, well, nothing exciting's happening here in the match wise, at least. Yeah, it just felt like a bit of an afterthought and a bit of a rush job, which, considering the three women involved in the match, it just seems like a bit of a disservice to all three of them, really.
Yeah, I mean, they did great with the time they had.
Yeah, they did, I understand it's a packed card and you've got to fit, like, something somewhere's got to be sort of stunted to fit everything in, but that definitely felt like the wrong place to do it. I think that match deserved 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And like I say, it was a good match. It wasn't like it was a terrible match or anything, but given more time, I think it could have been a hell of a lot better before they ended it. But I did like the ending.
Yes.
Because it's left a lot of questions and a lot of openings for cool stuff to happen down the line. So maybe that's their jumping off point to expand their women's division a bit more, because right now there's what, if you've got the House of Couture and whatever's happening there, you've got Laura Di Matteo, you've got obviously Millie and the amazing Jordynne Grace coming in at the end there, yes, as well. So you've got seven or eight women there who can all, in all different directions, sort of have reasons to want to get at each other. There's room to build a lot of, I mean, you can build the whole next year off just what goes on between those women.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, no, I did like that finish. I liked, it was a huge shock because obviously Ginny and Di Matteo had huge issues not so long ago.
Right. So let's kind of break this down real quick before we move on. Not to, you know, like I said, speak ill, I thought the match itself was really good for the time they had. Millie, yeah, McKenzie kind of did really well, obviously, but she got taken out when she was hit by the Strong Zero pile driver on the apron, and then Ginny, after a distraction by the House of Couture, hits Toni Storm. She hit the Acid Rainmaker, right?
Yes.
Yes. And to take the win. But the story is definitely what happened after the match. Pretty much, so Candy Floss and Laura Di Matteo came out halfway through the match to kind of even the odds against the House of Couture. After the match, they were having a bit of a stare down. No. It was actually during the match. That's how that ended. All right, sorry about that. Again, my brain is still fogged with Oktoberfest. So, Toni Storm has Ginny in the corner. House Couture comes in to confront Toni Storm. Candy Floss and Laura Di Matteo are there. And then Laura Di Matteo attacks Candy Floss, hits the Acid Rainmaker on Toni Storm.
I was gonna say, yeah, she hit Toni. It was, yes, Di Matteo that hit Toni with the Rainmaker, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Now it's starting to come back. And then she drags Ginny on to get the win. And House Couture is now up to five girls. And what I thought was very telling is Ginny hugged Laura. And that is the first time that she's shown really any kind of attachment, emotional-wise, to anyone in the House of Couture.
Well, she did, like, as is this age where they kind of keep building their stories on social media, and after the match, Ginny tweeted a photo of the match with everybody crossed out, including the House of Couture crossed out, apart from her and Di Matteo.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so I don't know if that was supposed to be just like because you lot didn't help me and she did, or if it's she's breaking up because I think it was Couture is no more was the hashtag with it or something like that. So I don't know if she's broken up the House of Couture already or if it's kind of a warning to or more her trying to say she's disappointed in them or what. It's kind of cryptic, but I suppose we'll see down the line what happens there.
Well, after the turn happened, Jordynne Grace comes out. And
yeah, I was so excited. It's ridiculous how excited I was.
And then she just ran through the House of Couture.
Yeah. I was literally standing on my seat because I've wanted to see her live in any form for a long time now. She's genuinely one of my favourite wrestlers at the minute. Everything I've seen her on, she's been brilliant. So when she came out, I was absolutely over the moon.
Yeah, it was.
She didn't really do much other than kind of run around and throw some people around, but that was enough for me to get excited for seeing her in progress in the future.
Well, yeah, so, you know, she's going to be in the She One, as we talked about earlier, and, you know, now kind of this run in kind of shows that, you know, she may be here to stay for a while.
Yeah, I hope so. I'd love to see her get a bit of a storyline going in progress and other places. And like I say, the more she wrestles here, the more chance of me seeing her wrestle live. So I'm happy for her to be here as long as possible.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So that brings us to the Progress Atlas Championship, another one where I was kind of surprised to see it this early, especially with, you know, this kind of being Doug Williams' last real big match.
Yeah. I think it was about the right spot on the card.
Do you? Okay.
I kind of liked it being there. I think just to get it, especially with how it ended, I think just to get that sort of that big emotional moment out of the way.
Yeah.
So we're not wait because everyone was waiting for it to come up, I think. So I think dropping it a bit earlier in the card made sense.
Right.
Because it was a hugely emotional moment. Obviously, Trent Seven beat Doug. So that retired Doug Williams from... That's his last ever British... Or last ever wrestling match in a British ring. I think he said he's working one or two matches abroad just to finish off commitments, but that's it done now.
Yeah, retired. That's kind of what I was... I saw him as well.
Yeah.
What was the atmosphere like?
It was just... The match... I mean, it was a really good match as well. It felt important. One thing that I kind of think went sort of unnoticed, it seems, by a lot of people was the finish to the match.
Which I thought loved
it. Clever, really funny. Because Trent Seven's kind of got this crossbody that never hits. And he always it's so funny to see it every time. He flies through the air in a crossbody and whoever he's wrestling just steps out of the way. As if it's like the easiest move in the world to dodge. And he finally hit it and it won in the match. And kind of think that got looked over a little bit, but I thought that was a really clever finish. I really enjoyed that. Thought it was really cool. And then the emotion in the place afterwards was just, I mean, I'm not ashamed to say I was in tears, man. It was like, that was a real special moment for me. I've watched Doug Williams wrestle for over 25 years live at every stage of his career. So for me, I was quite proud to be there for that moment. It felt really important and really special.
Yeah, it came across, you know, came across the screen. And like I said, I love the ending. I definitely made a note of it. I was actually going to bring it up. But that was a perfect way, I think, to end, because it was a very, like, World of Sport style ending.
Yeah.
And I think that's just kind of the perfect way to send kind of one of the
and the passing the torch,
right?
Yeah, it like I said, it felt like the passing the torch to, like, the old godfather of British wrestling, passing in the torch over to the sort of the new top guy.
Yeah,
it felt like he was handing it over to Trent Seven, and then, I mean, I sort of had a lump in my throat already because it felt sort of super special. And then when the whole roster came out on the stage, that was me gone then. that had been tears. That did. It's just the amount of respect and the amount of love in the room for Doug was really huge.
Yeah, I thought that was a really, really touching scene.
I love that they were all doing his pose and that as well, which just made it extra special. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
They're standing on the stage all holding their wrist and that. I thought that was a really nice touch from a lot of the guys.
Yeah, no, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment, I think. And, you know, if you're Doug Williams, and like we talked about a couple weeks ago, where, you know, he was kind of one of the lone bright spots in the dark ages of British wrestling to kind of go out at this new zenith, I think, is really special.
Yeah, there was a long time where he was one of the very few kind of kept the scene alive, really.
Mm-hmm.
For anything of, like, there wasn't, I mean, you had, like, through that era where Regal was getting over big in, like, WCW and WWE, WWF, whatever you want to call it, there wasn't a lot happening here. It was really hard to even find a show to go to, and it was usually in some dodgy working men's club.
Yeah.
But even though Doug would work abroad as well, he'd always come back and do those shows. So he was a stalwart of the business. So, yeah, I think it was I couldn't think of a more perfect end to his career than that.
Yeah, I think it's great, and I'm really, really happy for
Yeah, me too. I hope he continues in the business. I think from what I've been told, his school's pretty good, so I think he's going to keep working that side of things and sort of bringing through the new talent, which I think showed a lot of the guys on that stage have learned a lot from him. And yeah, a lot of the guys made a point of wanting to say their thank yous to him, and that's because he's influenced so many wrestlers over the years.
So that brings us to the final match of the first half. That's the no disqualification grudge match. Was supposed to originally be Jimmy Havoc versus Will Ospreay, but due to New Japan obligations, Paul Robinson gets the nod. I was a little too in the bag this morning to really fully commit to this match. I was already feeling a little squeamish. I didn't want to kind of fully go over. So you're gonna have to tell me a little bit about this.
I didn't see the finish because I'm not a deathmatch guy at all. And the second that I saw Havoc put Robinson's teeth on that light tube, I couldn't look. It just the thought of what he was about to do turned my stomach. And I read afterwards that he curb stomped him through the light tube, which is exactly what I thought he was going to do. And I didn't want that image in my head. There's just, I mean, I can't get my head around why anybody would want to do these things to themselves. It's just, I know there is a place for that sort of wrestling and people love that sort of stuff, but it's too much for me, all that blood and guts stuff. From what I saw of it, it was a great match, but there was a lot of points where I just couldn't watch. I don't want to watch guys cut themselves and hurt themselves and bleed, and yeah, it's a bit too much for me.
Oh,
So yeah, I didn't see a lot of it either, but I heard it was a really good death match. But
yeah.
there was a lot of points where I just didn't want to subject myself to it, to be honest.
I mean, yeah, I don't blame you. Obviously, I kind of took the easy way out too, but I thought that was a really good match for Paul Robinson to come back. Hasn't been in the Progress ring for such a long time, and to kind of go back to just being crazy Smeagol Paul Robinson is a great time, great thing.
Yeah, he's just a little like ball of hatred, isn't he? He's just such an angry, aggressive little man.
Just I'm coming through the curtain. He's
Yeah, and
already.
leaving as well. I mean, leaving, the dude was like pissing blood from every part of his body, and he's still like everyone's clapping for him, and he still just gives everyone the finger and marches off like he's had enough of you all. It's just, I don't know why people would want to do it to themselves, but they do it a lot.
I've heard, it's I don't know, could be adrenaline, could be, who knows, who knows? I'm just
Yeah.
not that guy.
I tried to watch because Jimmy Havoc won the Tournament of the Death for CZW 2017, and I had it online, and I tried to watch the whole tournament, and I think I got like a match and a half into it, and some guy was getting strangled with razor wire while being hit with a spiked baseball bat, and I was like, yeah, no, I'll just stick to slightly safer stuff.
Right. So that takes us into the intermission, and right into the Progress Tag Team Thunder Bastard match. What was this like? Kind of could have been a cluster, but I thought it went pretty well.
Yeah, it was loads of fun. It was just really, really fun. It was kind of almost all the eliminations were pretty predictable, but yeah, it was I really enjoyed it personally. I thought it was a really good match. I would have liked to have seen a bit more of, like, the stuff that I saw Bandido and Flamita do was like mind blowing, because I've not really seen them guys work at all, really. I'd have loved to have seen a bit more of them. But I mean, a match that bit, I mean, that could have been like, that could have taken up an hour if they didn't do it right. So they did have to sort of step it up and get through it. So I think they did the best with the time that they had. I did feel a bit sorry for Mills and Mayhew. Like, after not winning anything all the way through, I'd love to have just got to eliminate one team. I think would have been just let them eliminate one team.
Oh, they beat Sexy Star at a dome show.
They did. That's right, they did. Yeah,
that's why they came out. They came out third. Yeah.
But yeah, they. I just wanted them to eliminate just one team would have been nice for them. But yeah, the Anti-Fun Police lost Federales. His dive through the ropes is the most ridiculously fun thing I've ever seen. Have you ever seen a guy that big do that? He doesn't even fit through the ropes.
When he dives
through the ropes, he kind of parts the ropes like a wedge. Go through. It's unbelievable that he can even do it. But every time I see it, it's awesome. He's tons of fun.
He really is. I love Los Federales. I think that character, I mean, just the Anti-Fun Police in and of itself is kind of this weird thing where they're, but I love it because they're a comedy tag team that plays it straight.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of comedy wrestlers don't do that enough. And I think that's why, like, movies like Airplane is so amazing because they play the jokes straight.
Yeah, and they let the humor work. Yeah, they were. I mean, everybody had really good spots in the match. It was chaotic, but the good kind of chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
I liked. I don't know if it came across on demand, but Gibson and Drake, because the young veterans entering through the crowd.
I was crying with laughter.
It was, you could not hear a thing that Gibson was saying. Like, it was, I've never heard so many boos like that in my life. Like, I was awash in a sea of boos. you could see people were like waiting with bated breath to try and start talking again just so they could jump on him again. In the end, he just shouted over everybody. But yeah, that was my favourite part of the match, was them two coming in through the crowd, like just a total dickhead move that was. I loved it.
I love when heel wrestlers come through a crowd and verbally assault everyone around them. It's one of my favourite things in wrestling. And to see a master like Zach Gibson do it was so amazing.
Yeah, he has every single person in that room in the palm of his hand. He had 5,000 people doing exactly what he wanted them to do, which is just, he's a master of the mic.
And it was awesome. And it played well, and Grizzled Young Vets lasted till the end. So the elimination order was Maverick Mayhew and Connor Mills. They were the first eliminated. Sexy Star, Jack Sexsmith and David Starr. Anti-Fun Police. Then it was CC Comp, Chris Brooks and Timothy Thatcher. Then eliminated, followed by the Progress Champs, Bandido and Flamita. Then the 198. And then that left the Grizzled Young Veterans and Aussie Open. And Aussie Open picks up the win and the new tag team championships. What do you think of this move?
So happy for that. I think it's. I think we did say that would be enough. It's enough of a surprise that it's going to shock everybody in the room, but it's not. They deserve it at the same time because they've been going up and up since they've arrived at Progress. They've been getting better and better with every time we see them wrestle. So yeah, I think it was well deserved, and I think that was the really nice surprise of the night, was like having those two go over, and I think having the titles on them is a really good call. I really hope they turn them heel now. A lot like what they did with Travis Banks.
Right.
As soon as he became champion, he started just here and there becoming a bit of a dick. And like, over time, he was like a nice, slow, organic turn. I'd quite like him to do the same thing. Because they're Fight Club Pro. They're in Schadenfreude, is it? Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, and they've especially Connor Mills, not Connor Mills. Who's freaking Tokyo? Kyle Fletcher
Yeah.
is a really good heel.
He seems like a proper dickhead.
He plays the dickhead personified. Like he's really good in as a heel in Fight Club Pro. So yeah, I think I'd like to see him turn heel now because we've had on baby faces since they came in. So I'd really like to see that turn happen soon and see what they can do heel with the titles. I always prefer titles on heel. I love
Yeah.
seeing a champion. I love seeing a baby face win, but then I love seeing a heel holding a title.
Oh, definitely. And I think, with Mark Davis's size and Kyle Fletcher's like kind of subtle dickishness, I think it could be great as heels.
He doesn't need to change he doesn't need to change a lot to go from sort of, fun cocky to like dickhead cocky. It doesn't take a lot. He's already right balances that line pretty well.
Right.
So it wouldn't take a lot for him to flip from one side to the other.
Right.
And then Dunkzilla, you just have him slap people even harder,
I
pretty much.
don't even know if he can slap that much harder. He goes
Oh,
hard.
he can. He definitely can. I saw him slap a man so hard he turned to dust once.
So that brings us to the big money fight. The WXW versus Progress ty style of match. The Bruiserweight Pete Dunne, he defeats Ilya Dragunov, in what truly felt like a big fight.
Yeah, it felt huge in like being in there at the time. It felt like a title fight. Like I've never been to like a massive like boxing show or whatever, but it felt all MMA or but that felt to me like when you see like even like the MMA that was on last night, like that where the crowd's fired up and everybody's ready for the fight and both like whoever's supporting both sides are shouting for their guy and it just like turned up the whole place was just turned up to 11. It felt massive. Especially with Dragunov's manager. Oh, God, that's the
MJF, I'm
only
not even
name I
gonna
haven't
try.
written
I'm
down
not
yet.
even, no, not MJF, that's someone else. MFJ.
Yeah. I can't remember how to what his name is or how to say it.
Yeah.
Again, sorry, Dan, I didn't take that note. That's the only note I haven't written down. But yeah, but him getting the crowd fired up by putting Progress down and putting Pete Dunne down, calling him a pretender and a fake, and generally trashing him. It felt huge, and the match lived up to it. I thought.
It really did.
Yeah, that Dragunov's the real deal, man. Like, he just screams badass. The guy, he just comes across as super tough. I think Pete was working injured from what I've read in one or two places. And some people have kind of said, oh, that like they didn't like the match as much. It wasn't a great match. It could have been better. But I think for what it was and for the build, I think it was perfect. I didn't want it to be too long. I didn't want it to be like a. Kenny Omega style, like hour long
Epic,
sort of
yeah.
epic. Yeah, I wanted it to be like Smash Mouth wrestling. It was just two guys hammering each other as much as they could, as quickly as they could. I think it was perfect for. I hope they meet again in the future. I'd love to see where they go from here with that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be inevitable. I think there'll probably be a run back. But it was a really, really great show,
Yeah, I'd
or
love to see
great
more
match.
of Dragunov in progress. I
Yeah.
think he's like I saw enough of him there to, and where I've seen him other places to be. I'm a fan of what he does, and I want to see how he measures up against some of my favorite guys.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think he was great. I love the match. Pete Dunne is from what I've seen so far on the internet is he is out with an injury. He had a pull out of a couple Canadian shows that he was booked on. But there still hasn't really been any word that I've seen on to how severe it's been. So we'll kind of keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, I hope it's not too bad. I hope it's just a couple of weeks off to let something tighten up a little bit here and there. I don't think if it had been anything, because he seemed to enter that like right from the off, he seemed to be struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Not struggling, but you could tell that he wasn't quite at 100%. So I don't, if it had been anything anywhere near bad, I don't think WWE would have let an investment that big work that show, regardless of the size of it.
Right.
I don't think he would have been allowed to work hurt, like if he was really badly hurt.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think it was probably just obviously he could work through it. I don't think he was 100%, but it wasn't so bad as to where I really took notice of it.
Yeah. It was only because somebody had mentioned it before that I kind of noticed it, because then I was looking for it, you know.
Right.
Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have noticed either. But it's a huge win for Pete, that match. Hopefully they do something with it, not just be he won it. It was like a big showcase and that was it. I'm hoping that that's not the last we've seen of Dragunov, and he comes and causes a bit more trouble, because I've really enjoyed seeing him. Really did.
Yeah, I'd love to see more of Dragunov in progress. I think that'd be really fun. I think I'd love to see Dragunov more in England.
Yeah.
From what I understand, I think he kind of spends most of his time in Germany, but I'd love to see him get out more and get his name out more.
Definitely. His style of wrestling reminds me of, it kind of put me in the mind of Travis Banks' style.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of kinetic, he's just always looking to like come at you with the next thing. He doesn't give you that space to breathe. I really enjoyed that match. Really did.
Yeah, it was great. I'm going to probably rewatch it sometime this week to really kind of break it down, but it was a lot of fun. So that brings us to the TLC match between Pride of Wales, Eddie Dennis, and White Lightning, Mark Andrews. I was actually surprised this went on second to last. I thought this was going to be opening the second half.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting like a bit of a, you know, like a palate cleanser match in between before the main title, mm-hmm. but that isn't really progress's way. But I thought with such a big show, they'd find something lower down the card and move it up. But then when you look at the card, there isn't really a match you'd use as a palate cleanser there anyway. There's nothing on there that isn't super important to something somewhere. So
right.
I guess they just tried to get it as close to the main event as it could be, because I think with the build and the stipulation on that match, I think it deserved to be as close to the top of the card as possible, definitely.
Right.
And they paid it off big time as well.
Yeah, and this was probably the match with the biggest bill. I mean, it's been going on since Ali Pally of last year.
Yeah, it's literally a year, like a year and a day. I think it works out too.
Yeah. What do you? And we kind of talked about Eddie Dennis being the smart pick here, and he did. What did you think of the match as a blow off to the feud?
Yeah, it was as much of a war as I wanted it to be. There was a few spots where, I don't know if it's more to do with like the equipment they were using, or there are a few spots where things looked a little bit shaky and a little bit dodgy,
mm-hmm.
but that's not to take away from the match, because it was an incredible match. But I did feel bad from when there was a couple of spots where tables just didn't break.
Yeah.
And I did see somebody say, if nothing else, it's a great advert for British carpentry, because those tables were taking an absolute pounding and just weren't breaking. But yeah, it was a huge payoff to that story. I think it moves them on from each other well without I mean, there's at any point you can just come straight back to this feud and have Mark Andrews say that he's not okay with the way it finished or whatever. But it also moves Eddie on from that feud and puts him straight into the Progress title picture, which is huge for him and something I think he deserves as well.
Yeah, I think this really sets up Eddie Dennis for a lot of different story jump offs, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see Eddie Dennis kind of going forward, especially now that he has that, not recognition, but realization, I guess, that he's right.
Yeah.
That he was right.
Yeah. And it's basically everything that he said is confirmed now.
Mm-hmm.
So he can run with that as much as he wants, or he can now use those same kind of tactics to go after somebody else and say the same thing, like, I deserve to be where you are. I should have had the spot you've got, and now I have got that spot, so now it's my turn to cause some trouble. I hope he doesn't cash in too soon. I want him to... It's the same as like having a heel with a title. I love having a heel with that Money in the Bank type of thing. Having something to hang over the babyface champion's head.
Right. Kind of that,
I love the spot where they run into the ring to cash in, and then the guy they're cashing in on either like pops back up or like they always seem like they're just seconds away from cashing in, and then something stops them from doing it.
Right.
You know, that's the spot. I hope that we get a few of those kind of things, or a few of the ones where he just sits with his contract on his lap on a chair watching the match and things like that, and like biding his time. I think that's really good heel work with that kind of thing, so I hope we see some of that. I don't want him to just cash it in straight away.
And I think Eddie Dennis will be smart with it. I mean, he obviously knew how to... if you really look at the build to this story, it's he goaded Mark Andrews into a number one contender match.
Yeah, basically. He basically talked Andrews to giving him exactly what he wanted.
Exactly. And then he
forced Progress's hand to make it something special at Wembley. Like, if going by his character. So it's, the way I think the build to it was flawless, especially considering that 9 months out of that year, he couldn't wrestle.
Yeah.
It just goes to show you how good of a heel he is, that he couldn't even work for those 9 months, and yet he's still the biggest heel in the company right now.
I think Eddie Dennis will probably be champion within the next 5 months. That's my guess.
Yeah. I really hope he gets that title soon.
Yeah.
Not too soon. I want him to toy with Walter first.
Which?
But I do want him to take it off Walter.
Right. I think he will. I think he will.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect transition into the main event, the Progress World Championship, the Ring General, Walter versus Tyler Bate. Both came out with Timothy Thatcher in Walter's corner. Tyler Bate had Pete Dunne and Trent Seven, and this really had that big fight feel.
Yeah, this was my favorite match of the card.
Really?
Yeah, which I know it's quite rare for the main event to be that nowadays, which kind of seems kind of weird, but that could have been the main event any show anywhere in the world, and it would have done the job. It was so good.
Yeah, I thought it was I thought the hype video did more to like get myself hyped up for it than like the last couple events. And then once Tyler came out in like the boxing robe and the gold trunks, I was like, all right, this is it. Let's do this.
Yeah. It felt like you say, you had the big fight feel. It felt important. It felt like something special was going to happen. I genuinely think that was the best match on the card. And I don't think it could have been any better. Those two guys put on an absolute clinic of small man versus big man wrestling. And how fucking strong is Tyler Bate? It's ridiculous.
They don't call him a big, strong boy for nothing.
But that lift like he, when he lift, there's a point where he lifted Walter off the mat in this, like the suplex, and he picks his. How does a guy that small pick up a guy that big, and not without his feet touching down, suplex him?
It boggles the mind. It truly does. It made, like how he's that. And he's not a big guy.
Yeah, it made my back hurt watching it because he's really small, Tyler Bate, like height wise as well. Like every time I've met him, I've met him quite a lot of times, and I still think it's dead weird how little he is. But I've seen the size of the guys he throws around, and it does blow your mind that he's that strong when he's that size.
Yeah, it's one of the big moves I really like. Got shook by was the suplex on the outside. Where Tyler Bate like put Walter in a vertical suplex and then suplexed him on the mats, and I thought that was insanity.
Yeah, you could almost feel the impact on that. I mean, we were like 10 rows away and you could hear it, you heard Walter hit the mat.
it was real rough.
Yeah, but yeah, I really enjoyed that match. It was everything it needed to be. They both went to war, and yeah, there's not a lot I can pick apart from it. Really, it was just a really good match.
What did you think of the ending where Walter had Tyler Bate in the sleeper? He was going out, and then the crowd really got behind Tyler Bate. And then as soon as they did, pile driver.
It was a fast finish, wasn't it? They were kind of building. Then it was just like almost a snap of the fingers and it was done. It was almost like the whole match Walter had been toying with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided, like, I've had enough now. And just like that, finished him off. But I don't think it damaged Tyler just because of how much impressive stuff he'd done up to that point.
Right.
Like usually I don't like those sort of finishes where they've kicked out of six or seven different things and then all of a sudden one move finishes it. That annoys me a little bit sometimes. Like I think when you get to that point, usually there should have to be a good series of moves to finish off that person who you haven't been able to finish until that point.
Right.
But when it's someone the size of Walter compared to Tyler Bate, I think it just adds that full stop that, right, I had this one move in my bag that I wasn't going to use on you, but you forced my hand kind of thing. So I think that's one of the rare occasions where that sort of thing does work.
Yeah, I thought,
yeah,
I thought
did it, like it as a finish.
Yeah, I thought it was really good finish. I thought it was really kind of smart, and it goes into kind of Walter's style of that, you know, kind of more... feels more like a fight,
yeah,
you know, than others, but I thought it was really good. I really, really enjoyed this main event. I thought that was a perfect way to end it.
Yeah, it lived up to the expectations, definitely.
So
really did.
Overall, is this a success? Do we think they're coming back to Wembley? What do you think?
I don't know if they're coming back. If they are, there's a couple of things they do need to work out, the main one being timing. Because I do think it's hard to be diplomatic with it, because on one side, I do think it was a very small minority that the late finish actually affected, just a very vocal minority. But at the same time, progress do need to be a bit more mindful of. Even if it is only a small minority, it's still affecting a portion of your fans having a finish that's almost an hour late.
Right.
Especially a show that big where people are travelling from all over the country to come and see it. And not everybody has the luxury of being able to drive all the way down to London. I was lucky that I basically have a driver. He drives everywhere and I just drink when I get there. So I'm quite lucky in that respect, but a lot of people did have to make trains and things. And I do feel a bit sorry for them. So I think the main thing they need to, if they're going to run Wembley again, is work on the timing or just say it's going to finish later.
Right.
Say like, it's rather than saying it'll be done by 8:30 and restraining yourself on time like that, just say it'll be done by 9:30. and then make sure you're well within that rather than trying to fill your whole time, because the show would have been more than long enough if it had finished on time. Mm-hmm. And I personally had no problem with the show running as long as it did, because it's more wrestling and right. I had a way to get home. But I do understand people's gripes with the timing. But other than that, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't run Wembley again. Make their yearly big show a Wembley regular.
I think that would be smart. You know, if that was like your yearly September show, which is kind of how they've ran it so far. Is that September is typically their big show?
Yeah, every year. It's every end of September every year. The only thing is that they announced that last year at the Ali Pali show. So they had a year to sell those tickets.
That is true. So,
that they haven't announced it again, I think they're going to come back down to Ali Pali. I think it was just an experiment to see if they could sell that many tickets as a one-off. I don't think they're going to be doing Wembley again next year, maybe every other year or something.
Right.
Kind of like how the Manias go up and down. Like every Mania isn't an 80,000 stadium, is it? They kind of like bump it up and down a little bit. I think it's going to be the same with that, but on a smaller scale, obviously.
Right. So do you think... but they're running Ali Pali in May...
Yeah.
With the Super Strong
Style. 3 days, yeah. Yeah, over 3 days again. Which, selling that out for 3 days straight is an accomplishment in itself.
Right.
Is Most there... people who do Ali Pali do all 3 days, but a lot of people don't. Right. So they are selling a good stack of tickets there already.
Could there be another venue that they run in for the September show that may be in between Ali Pali and Wembley?
Maybe like 3,000? There's other arenas and things. I mean, just within London, there's probably like a good 5 or 6 places they could probably run that are similar, like a sort of halfway house, 3,500, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
If they look outside of London, there's tons of places, like almost every major city's got arenas from like 2,000 up to 3,500, 4,000. So there's plenty of places that they can look to. I couldn't see them going outside of London for their big show because that's their home.
Right.
But there are plenty of places in London that they can do that outside of Alexandra Palace and Wembley, definitely. But I would think even if they do that and go for somewhere sort of in between, you're going to hear about it in the next couple of weeks, I would have thought, so they can start selling tickets as fast as possible.
Yeah, I think we'll probably hear pretty soon.
Yeah, I reckon within the next month, I think we'll know what they're doing for their big show next year. Gives you plenty of time to get your flight booked and that, doesn't it, mate?
Well, <that's, laughs> the problem is it comes like right at the beginning of the school year, so it's kind of hard for me to get out. So, but I'll try. I'll try.
They can teach themselves for a week or two. They'll be fine, mate.
No, that is true. That is true. One of these days, I'm due back. I'm due back to get out there.
Yeah, we need to definitely get you to a couple of shows.
Definitely, definitely. So, one last thing before we take off, we got to do our throwback match of the week. This comes by way of YouTube. We'll put up the link on our Twitter, and it was Robbie Brookside versus John Kenny, a very young and svelte looking Robbie Brookside.
He looks like do you know who Rodney is?
I don't know. I do not.
Do you know Only Fools and Horses?
I don't understand.
I'll send you a picture of him, but it's like a British TV show that's it was like, I think, 70s and 80s, and then right up until like almost modern day, they did like special episodes and stuff. Right. And there's a character in it who's like one of the main characters, and he's called Rodney, and he looks exactly like Robbie Brookside looks like in this in this match, apart from the fact that Robbie Brookside seems to be wearing what he's pretending is a wrestling singlet, but is actually definitely a women's swimsuit.
I was thinking the same thing, where it looked like more like he was a part of the women's All Japan roster in the 90s, yes, like Manami Toyota type situation, yeah, than he did a British wrestler.
Yeah, and that's really my only criticisms of the match. His gear was terrible, and he looks like Rodney. But other than that, it was actually a really good match.
I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was really interesting. This is my first like real kind of British rules type match where any knockdown they were getting the 10 count.
I was going to say, doesn't that 10 count? Like I remember going to shows when I was a kid and that being like a big part of how a lot of matches played out. and you kind of forget about it. Modern day,
right,
just doesn't exist anymore.
Right. It was like any time they were put on the ground.
It's as soon as your back, as soon as your back touches the mat, you don't instantly respond to the ref, then you get a 10 count.
I thought it was,
and it's a fast 10 count as well.
It really was, and I thought it was a really cool like wrinkle to the match.
Yeah, it speeds things up and it keeps the match moving at a really high pace.
So one thing I did notice was when Progress ran their throwback show, the 1978 show.
Yeah.
The commentary, I knew that it was funny. I didn't quite get the references. And then the commentary in this match was like, oh, this is what they were doing.
Yeah, don't they sound like they've never watched wrestling before?
It's not that they don't never watch wrestling. It's just that they're not interested in wrestling.
Yeah, there just happens to be a wrestling match going on while they're just sitting and having a little chat. Like, they barely name a move or anything. They just sort of have a little chat. Like, at one point, one of them was calling out, like, what some woman's doing at the side of the ring. He was like, oh, that woman in the front row just said, tear his leg off. Something like that. It's like a really odd version of commentary.
I loved it, though. I loved it because it just felt like the Sunday afternoon, just, oh, yep, and there's the headbutt, and goodness me, that looks like it hurts. And then just was crying with laughter.
He's going to have some treatment to his mouth when this match is over. Like, it's just dead matter of fact, isn't it?
It was.
When you compare that to, I mean, when that was from what? It's got to be from, I did try and find out. It was, Robbie Brooksall was 19, so it's well over 20 years old.
Yeah.
25 years. But if you think back 25 years in like American wrestling.
Right.
You were already well into like very loud men shouting about what's happening in the ring kind of era.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we're Vince McMahon yelling in the, you know, watch who he's got him now.
Yeah. We just got to that here. like these guys were probably still working up until about a fortnight ago. Like, some of the commentary is still like that on some of the shows. It's dead old timey, but I love it, but you could not have it and you'd learn no less.
You could almost smell the cigarette smoke coming through the speakers with their commentary.
Did you see they kept going to shots of like really old ladies in the front row as well, which I thought was brilliant, because that's a huge, like, my first ever wrestling show I went to, my nan took me. And my nan looks like every one of those old ladies. My nan used to look like all of them, with like that bouffant perm and
right.
like a jumper that she knitted herself and all that.
Well, I loved it because at the end when they were interviewing Robbie, they were like, oh, you have a bit of a young following from Liverpool. And he was like, yeah, it'd be nice if the teenagers got out and came to the shows.
Yeah, because he was the youngest person in the room by about 35 years.
But I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was just, that to me is like a slice of my childhood. That's what I used to go and watch with my grandparents all the time when I was a kid. That's the sort of wrestling that made me fall in love with pro wrestling.
It's beautiful, man. It's a beautiful thing. And to kind of capstone that with Wembley, I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But well, I know it's been a long day for you, so I'm gonna let you get going. Before we leave, though, we want to remind you, rate, review, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you guys are listening to this. You can follow us on Twitter. Tech, what's our Twitter?
Yank in Court
Pod. Yes.
Yeah.
We're making fun of me last week for forgetting it, so I wanted to put you on the spot. You can go, you can drop us a line at our Gmail at yankeeincourtpodcast@gmail.com. Also, we want to direct you guys, if you haven't already, if you guys don't already, listen to our sister podcasts, Radio Strong Style. They do a good job of covering New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Great show.
It's a great show. Two good brothers over there that really kind of are diving into not just New Japan, but also Lucha Underground. Sorry, I don't know why I was blanking. And then also, if you have time, this is probably one of the best podcasts out there right now, especially one of the newer ones, the Two Black Marks podcast with Marcus Gant and Justin Marcus Good.
Yeah, so absolutely, they've proper landed on their feet and hit the ground running. It's so, jump right to the top of my favorite podcast list. It's so good.
That comes out every Friday, and it's one of the best podcasts I listen to, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it's probably in my top three.
Yeah, I'm very proud to be even remotely associated with it, because that show is ridiculously good.
Right. So with that said, we'll let's get going. If you want to stop by savagestash.com as well for all your retro wrestling merchandise, go ahead and do that. Shout out to Evan Cronenberg. Other than that, anything you want to leave us with, Dak?
No, that's good, man. I'm going to go and have a couple of whiskeys and watch some wrestling.
Oh, man, I'm jealous of you already, brother. All right, I'll talk to you next week, bud.
Yeah, see you soon, man.
All right, bye.